You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Good morning and welcome to NSPS Radio Hour for another edition today. We're excited to have Lisa Isom back with us. Welcome, Lisa.
Well, thank you.
I think most of our listeners know Lisa is the person with Assurance Risk Managers, actually the owner of Assurance Risk Managers, which is the group that manages the NSPS insurance program, and we're always interested in sharing information with our listeners. We get a lot of comments back. I think we've mentioned this before, Lisa, from folks, and you may even have some since our last time. I hadn't realized that it'd been a while since we had you on the show. With everything that's been going on lately, I've had hardly any time to breathe at all, much less look forward or back on what was going on. But I'm feeling a little better today because last week my phone was dying, and I used the stopwatch on it to keep track of time, and it kept going off on me.
Oh, no.
It wouldn't hold the charge for like 15 seconds or something.
So. Oh, no.
But today we're a little bit better off. I guess we'll be able to stay on track, hopefully, a little bit better. But anyway, thanks for joining me again.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. Yeah, it's been a while. So I know, you know, for the listeners, I believe the last time I was on the show, we were actually speaking about employment practices liability, and we had just finished up that segment, as you know, we've been doing over the past year now, or a little over a year now, you know, picking up insurance little pieces at a time to, you know, try to better familiarize people with the exposures that are out there and some of the buzzwords within the insurance arena, if you will, and to hopefully help them better protect themselves. And as you indicated, you know, I get a lot of responses on a phone call basis to where, you know, hey, you know, we've listened to this show or I've listened to that show, and helping people to try to better secure their financial risks out there, for lack of a better word. But everything from preparing to sell a business to actually taking care of the business on a day-to-day operation to comparing quotes. So thank you again for allowing us to participate in the show.
Yeah, always great to have you. I know the last couple of shows we've done, we've begun to talk about a number of things that are in a lot of ways new, I guess, to our profession, to the world in general, like really, because of all the advancements in technology and things we would have never even thought about just a few years ago in terms of how it might impact our businesses.
Right.
One of the things that we were leading up to when we left last time was this whole concept of cyber liability, which is, you know, I just think about that and think, well, what the heck is that anyway?
It
just seems like there's something new and different every corner you turn.
You know, and from my perspective, I mean, you know, naturally, as insurance changes, it's just like the employment practices that we were on the last segment. You know, years ago, you heard of sexual harassment or wrongful termination or age discrimination, etc., but then you didn't have coverage for it. I mean, it was a cost of doing business per se. It was typically excluded. But as our world changes, it's becoming more and more and more scary because you know, unfortunately, you've got coverage that's there for business reasons, and then you have these new exposures that are developing because of our because of the modern age equipment or the way of doing business, etc., etc. You know, there's, you know, a term that's used for this cyber liability that, you know, that businesses, you know, shift from bricks and mortar of years ago to now clicks and orders, as they put it. And that's really what's happening. It's opening up exposures, and then naturally there's attorneys, there's, you know, the legal system, the judicial system that goes after those pockets. And if you're not aware, or even you don't even think about having the exposure until you're hit with something and you go, oh my goodness, I better protect myself from this or protect myself from that. And one of the things that kind of, you know, comes into play oftentimes from a surveyor's perspective is naturally the electronic data that we're always touching. And you know, something as simple as a laptop, and, you know, do you have a laptop in your car? Are you taking a laptop, you know, from your perspective, a laptop to a show, or do you have one on an airplane, and, you know, so forth? Well, that's, you know, oftentimes the things that are stolen out of trucks or stolen, you know, as you're traveling or left or are breached, you know. So when you're accessing the public internet space, it's breachable. And I can tell you personally, you know, just over the past, couple of months, I'll give you this as an example. You know, I travel a lot, and I'm on, you know, my best day out there is to get on a Southwest airline or United airline, and you have Wi-Fi, okay? I'm like, oh, yay, I can, you know, work 2.5 hours or 3 hours. I was on my way to the Tennessee Land Surveying Conference, and there's a credit card that I use only for my Wi-Fi, and I use it at no other place. So I'm on the plane thinking I'm going to be able to work. I get on there. I plug in my computer. I put in my credit card. I land in Tennessee, and by the time I get back to my office on Monday, I have a hotel, a gas charge, a really nice dinner, and something else and something else. There was like 7 charges on my credit card in Brooklyn, New York, as I'm in Nashville.
Well, you never know. It's easy to mistake Nashville for Brooklyn, right? You
mean. Yeah, so they say. But, you know, here someone had basically monitored my keystrokes while I'm in the air on the plane. Man. On the plane. And so, you know, it can happen anywhere. And so today we really want to address the coverage that's referred to as cyber liability, and it is a new exposure that's out there. You hear, you know, about the targets. You hear about, you know, the credit cards that's done, but there's also so many other things that are covered under cyber liability. So you don't have to be, you know, taking credit cards over the internet to necessarily be one of the ones that would have coverage to apply. You know, in that particular, in you know, just outside hackers as an example, you know, Heartland Payment Systems was the people that basically, if you go into you know, a store, oftentimes that is an outside third-party vendor that takes care of the credit cards. And, you know, in that particular case, that was a breach that cost that company upwards of like $70 million, okay? So that is just the credit card usage, much less any type of data, identity theft, you know, reporting of monitoring of the credit cards and the credit card services once a breach has occurred. But you know, there's so many other types of breaches that is actually covered underneath cyber liability that is excluded somewhere else.
Well, one of the things, and I don't know, a couple of minutes before the break here, but one of the things that I'm always interested in from the insurance perspective is it must be a huge portion of what insurance companies do, having, I assume they have teams of people just trying to keep up with all the potentials that are out there as rapidly as things are changing. That must be a really tough task. Or does it just come up as somebody gets hit with something like that?
Well, you know, as an exposure is developed, you know, as the computer systems are used and outsourcing goes into play, you know, if a claim occurs and there is a gray area or a covered a coverage that is lacking under, say, a general liability policy, then there are developers, and basically what happens is typically, you know, you form a task group that says, listen, you know, this is a huge exposure and it's growing, and we need to develop a form or an insurance cover that would take care of those exposures. So, you know, the whole reason for insurance is, you know, shifting that financial responsibility to a third party. And
right.
So really as that those types of things occur, and you see where claims aren't covered over here, and you're trying to get them covered over, you know, or get them covered at all, then you have to have this developmental stage of forming a cover and then getting it filed within the states in order to have them filed and used. So, yeah, that's basically exactly what happens. And there are, you know, tons of people all over the country that do that, and for every carrier, basically, that's looking to try to, you know, take care of it, because the public comes back and says, well, wait a second, I can't take on a $70 million claim. You know, what's the likelihood of you know, my being responsible for something? And, you know, you may have, you know, a smaller company that the studies show a one data breach can cost you on an average, with legal expense and data breach monitoring, of about $500,000. Well, I don't know many companies that can take on that. So then you're going to have to go and try to find a carrier that will take on and develop a cover to cover that exposure. So that's kind of where the coverages come from. And then, you know, they'll run off and something else will come in. I mean, you know, when you look at over the past 30 years, how insurance has changed, and then as you know, claims occur and things transpire, you haven't charged enough premium over, say, on a general liability to pick up all of the personal injury or...
We need to go to our first break, Lisa, so
okay.
Let's do that, and we'll pick up on
okay.
this in a minute.
Okay.
Want to know if your Schonstedt locator is still under warranty? Go to Schonstedt.com and click on Warranty Finder in the lower left-hand corner. Enter your 6-digit serial number, and it will tell you everything you need to know. Out of warranty? Click on Repair Department. But here's a tip. Before sending it in, pick up a $25 discount by going to Specials and Sales under the Buy Now tab at www.schonstedt.com.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
Quick Stakes is your answer to staking. Lightweight, easy to ride on, easy to use, easy to find, and won't break your back carrying them like the old-fashioned wooden stakes. Have you tried a sample? If not, get a pen and paper and write down this number, 800-438-0387, or go to quickstake.com, that's QUIKSTAKE.com, and order your samples. Ask your surveying supply dealer for Quick Stakes today.
Getting into underground utility location? If so, you'll want to know about the Schonstedt Instrument Company's MPC kit, a multi-purpose combo for locating both ferrous objects and underground pipes and cables. And because it consists of two instruments in one package, it qualifies for trade-in allowances on two locators. Any kind, any make, any condition. Contact your dealer for details or visit www.shonstadt.com. That's S-C-H-O-N-S-T-E-D-T.com.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
And we're back with Lisa Eisen talking about insurance issues, and today we're talking specifically about cyber issues. It makes me wonder, Lisa, and maybe there's not enough data on this kind of thing yet to know, but we've talked about before the whole equipment theft thing, which at least in parts of the country seems to still be pretty hot. I get reports from Florida still all the time. But is there any incidences of where people are stealing electronic data from what surveyors are collecting? I mean, I'm not sure why anybody would want to do that. I'm just curious if you hear anything like that.
Well, you know, not that we have had reported at this point. Now, what I would mean by that is they probably, unless they are covered, we're not going to see that type of claim data. Okay, we would see where, you know, a claim would be denied because of it, but where we have seen it is where something as simple as websites that's being developed. So you're wanting to advertise from a land surveying perspective, or from a web, you know, get your name out there on the website, etc. Where we have seen exposure is where the data theft, if you will, is a very commonplace thing to do. So what they would do is try to get in and steal your client information, so federal IDs, social security numbers, etc. The opposite side of that is you know, maybe you want to set up your web base, and you're out there and you're thinking, okay, I'm going to put together a website, and you start to get pretty pictures. And you pick this picture or that picture, or maybe this would apply or that would apply, and basically it is the misuse of that information. So you get into a copyright infringement. So, you know, somebody's picture that you don't understand that you're actually taking it and misusing it on a website, that can then come back and electronically cause you a liability. Another thing that I will tell you is, you know, it's more the intellectual property that has been, that's where that coverage would come into play, where it is typically excluded from a GL policy. They're not contemplating the personal injury or that infringement under a GL policy. They're contemplating your exposure out in the field, okay? One thing that I will say that is covered under a cyber liability policy is for your employees and their misuse of websites. Now, this is getting into both misuse of websites, sending, you know, maybe membership lists in your situation, Kurt, or client information in a surveying company's perspective. That, say, for example, if you don't have an encrypted software on your laptops or your phones or your iPhones, etc., that will encrypt your client's information. Someone can hack in, get their information, and penetrate it. Okay, so the idea is to track it backwards and get to people's servers. Okay, if that is then tracked from your employee, how many times do we see? I know I see it quite often, to where I'll get a really weird email coming from maybe a surveyor in the middle of the night, and it's saying, "Hey, Lisa, how are you?" Well, you know, that's not a normal email for me. Okay, well, when you actually see it, all they want to do is open it up, and that is a virus that has basically got into someone's email address book and sent it to everybody in the country. Okay? If you open it up, it's a virus on somebody's computer. And that virus tries to get into somebody's server and causes all kinds of havoc. That business interruption is covered under a cyber liability policy. So there's all kinds of things that are covered under that.
What if you were talking about employees' use and employees, business owners, and if people get into all kinds of websites, either on purpose or not, and open up these kind of things. So if one were to have cyber liability insurance, is it possible that somehow open up this Pandora's box, get traced back to one of your employees? So then are you, as the owner, liable for what that person did? And if you are, is there insurance for that? I mean, I understand
yes.
the insurance for when you get breached and some of your stuff gets taken, but what if it gets traced back and sort of, quote, originated at your place?
No, that's exactly where cyber liability is picking up. So it's not only covering the breaches in reverse to your client's information, but it's tracking it back to employees within your own company. So if they, you know, can track it back, you know, you can implement things and procedures in your office to say, you know, this is a company-owned computer. It's to be used only for, you know, company purposes. We do not want you, you know, surfing the internet and doing this and that. We can all do that. However, if by chance they do surf the internet and they, you know, get personal emails or et cetera, that will then open that company up for liability. They can also go a step further. One of the coverages under the cyber liability is referred to as accidental or purpose slander, okay? Emails in today's world, if you know, they're communicating, most everything is being communicated via email. If you reread your email, sometimes it might not come across as nicely as you intended it to be, okay?
Certainly can be interpreted differently, that's for sure.
Yeah, exactly. That is an issue. Harassment of other employees and outside individuals, those are the buzzwords, if you will, in today's world, okay? If you are sending emails to people and maybe you throw in a off-color joke, that coming from your personal email or your company email will open you up for liability. And that is even going as far as let's see here how they refer to it as employee-related exposures, okay? So it basically goes back, and that is the way the cover is worded. It's employee-related exposures. So even if you can get into a harassment situation, a discrimination suit, if it's in writing and they can prove it that it came from your company computer, it's opened you up for a defense purpose to say, no, that wasn't intended to be this way, it's intended to be that way. But at the end of the day, you're still going to have to defend it. And then in reverse, it can even open up the company for the employee to feel as if their privacy has been violated. If you don't have something in writing that indicates this is not to be used for, you know, personal emails or for personal use, and then you go back to even defend yourself, you're then into the possible suit of a claim because of their privacy. So this is a coverage that is snowballing as we develop it. I mean, from February, and we were supposed to actually chat about the cover in February show to now, it's like daylight and dark, because this is a new coverage that is being attacked, if you will, in every direction possible. If we just stop and think about just our own communications, you know, rather than getting magazines, we get newsletters, right? Mm-hmm. We get electronic information sent with clicks on it. And then you attach that click and open it up. Everything is clicking, if you will, in today's environment. And if we haven't validated the use of putting web links on our websites or getting promotions of our approvals to do the hyperlinks to websites, that opens up the person that's doing it to a liability on the other end. So if it links to their website and you have a virus or something that has attached that website, you could be liable for it.
So just thinking of it in terms of we do a newsletter every week. So mm-hmm. what you're saying is if somehow some link that was in an article that either we created or somebody created for us, and that led to a virus somewhere, then that's where it could be. Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
That's exactly right. So when you're doing those types of things, is, you know, if you're subletting those works to an outside party, is to make sure your interest has been taken care of when you're subbing it out. You know, are they? Do they have firewalls established and virus scans, on and so forth, to make sure that's being done? And then you're being named or subrogated, a waiver of subrogation to go back to you on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense, because we develop a lot of our own material along with our government affairs consultant, and of course we check everything we do. But mm-hmm. there's other stuff on there, too. I mean, people do advertising, or sometimes the people that create the newsletter put in articles, you know, kind of fill space, mm-hmm. that type of thing.
Yep.
So, I grasp all that. So we're about ready to go to break here. When we come back, maybe we can talk a little bit about how do you go about quantifying what kind of coverage you need. I mean, it seems to me that would be a tough thing to do.
Want to know if your Schonstedt locator is still under warranty? Go to Schonstedt.com and click on Warranty Finder in the lower left-hand corner. Enter your 6-digit serial number, and it will tell you everything you need to know. Out of warranty? Click on Repair Department. But here's a tip. Before sending it in, pick up a $25 discount by going to Specials and Sales under the Buy Now tab at www.schonstedt.com.
Quick Stakes is your answer to staking. Lightweight, easy to ride on, easy to use, easy to find, and won't break your back carrying them like the old-fashioned wooden stakes. Have you tried a sample? If not, get a pen and paper and write down this number, 800-438-0387, or go to quickstake.com, that's quickstake.com, and order your samples. Ask your surveying supply dealer for Quick Stakes today.
With all the back and forth in today's politics, it seems as though the Constitution gets lost in the mix. If you want to brush up on your Constitution, then join Michael Conley every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. for the show Our Constitution on AmericasWebRadio.com.
Attention surveyors, are you aware that yellow stick you're using is saving lives all over the world? Yes, that Pinfinder is clearing fields and villages of unexploded cluster bombs and other hidden explosives in over 25 countries. Schonstedt, in cooperation with International Mine Action Programs, provides free locators to where they are most urgently needed. To find out how you can help, visit the NSPS website at nsps.us.com. And thank you.
You're listening to americaswebradio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
This is the time of the show, Lisa, when our sponsor, Parker Davis Quick Stakes, has our little contest for the week. And
mm-hmm.
you've done this before.
Hi.
So for the first person who emails to quickstakescontest@americaswebradio.com and gives the answer you're going to provide, we'll have a winner. So I guess the simple question is a two-word answer, and that is, what topic are we discussing today?
Yes, and that's cyber liability.
Cyber liability is what we're looking for. Thanks for participating in that. Before we went to the break, we were talking about these issues of inadvertent use or things that can happen that you don't really focus on or even think about, where you could find yourself in a liability situation from the cyber side. So
right.
The question that I was thinking of, and I don't know if it actually made the air because we had to break quicker, was what's the process one would follow to try to grasp the whole realm of what their coverage limits ought to be?
Well, from a coverage limit perspective, you kind of look at your exposure. How many employees do I have? Do you have laptops? Are you doing any work? If you're doing any work online, so whether that is, accepting payments, using credit cards, doing any type of banking online, you need coverage. It's just as simple as that. Now, the amount of coverage is something that's debatable. So what I would suggest to you is maybe getting a worksheet. You can certainly contact us, and we can certainly send you a copy, Kurt, and maybe have it available on the website. But a worksheet that will help you look at the type of exposures you do have. So as an example, this is a cover that you can typically pick up, $100,000, $250,000, $1 million, and it's not astronomically high. It's one that you can pick up some personal injury by endorsement, typically under your GL coverage. But then there's the broader version is a standalone coverage, and that is the cyber liability coverage. We do have an exclusive form through the NSPS insurance program, but the worksheet will help you, take a look at do we have an encrypting software that's running on our phones, on our laptops, and our office computers? That's a question. If you don't have, most policies will exclude any coverage if you don't have it. So that basically will help protect you. So not only determining the risks that you have and how do you insure them, but to help you look at it from a risk management perspective as well.
Yeah,
so,
I can see, for example, like here, and then mm-hmm. as you're talking, I'm thinking about all of our state affiliates because they have websites as well, and they're doing commerce of some kind, typically.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of understand where all that comes from. If I'm a practitioner, and a lot of the things you talked about obviously can happen in anybody's office. Is that a different perspective that they would look at, or is it the same kind of questions that you ask? I mean, they're not likely to be selling books or, taking in dues or, those kind of things, but they might, I don't know if they take payments online for their work, but still, that exposure's out there if employees are doing stuff or people are just trying to. I was sitting there thinking earlier, does anybody ever go into a surveyor, engineer, architect kind of arrangement and try to mine data on the projects they're doing or something? I don't know why anybody would do that.
Right.
But it's,
right. Well, they certainly could, but, what gets you is the employee information. So this could be electronic, or this can also be by paper. So as an example, employee driver's information, personnel information, you know, identity theft from that perspective as well. So, you know, if you're paying by credit card in your company and you're paying by credit card, maybe your bills or your banking information, et cetera, and it's stored on your computer, it can certainly be tapped. It can certainly be breached. And so that information is one area as well. So there are, you know, securing the data that is on there, encrypting the information that's being sent out. So it you know, and those are very inexpensive software pieces that can be added to anyone's computer or fax machine or email machine that can, it encrypts that information to where if somebody did try to get that information. Right now, the big thing that's going on right now is no matter where you're at, is people refinancing. So you're getting employee verifications sent to you by fax or email, right, and they're asking for a validation of employment in order for people to refinance. Well, guess what? Just that email can give somebody else the identity theft. So, you know, these people are so smart that's out there trying to breach people's information that they're monitoring those emails, and they can see when it's fired to someone for employment verification, and they're waiting until that information comes back across. And then they've got everything.
People are thinking, okay, why would anybody, you know, I'm sitting here in Small Business USA, why would anybody care, or why would anybody take the time to monitor me? But I'm assuming these folks that are doing all this have pretty sophisticated software, and they're just listening for a ping somewhere, and they're looking at, you know, billions of bits of data or something.
Yep, they do, and honestly, it's amazing. You know, I say quite often, you know, if they work that hard at something legitimate, you know, but I, you know, in my own office, you know, that situation that I was telling you, that's just a credit card. You know, that's a credit card that's monitored. And then when we start to pull it and you start to look at it, it's $700-$800 before you know it. And if you haven't caught it, then, you know, will your institution, you know, support you on it? Oftentimes not. If you go back and you haven't caught that fraudulent act, to go back and get it taken off your card, that's $700 or $800. And if it's month after month,
we've had a couple of instances, just Sandra and me,
where
the credit card company will actually call you if you don't. Like, we always try to tell them when we're out of town, you know, because we may be spending money somewhere.
Right.
But they'll call you sometimes and say, "Did you? You know, I see you were here at this particular time. Did you actually send some money down there in Lubbock, Texas or somewhere?"
Right.
And so I don't know that all companies do that, but I know we've had those kind of calls before.
Yeah. If you know, what I've been told and you know, what I see from this type of coverage is, you know, they will see whether or not they can get by with a dollar or $2 on a credit card to see if that card is really active. And then once they see that it's active, they are duplicating that card. They're making their own card. And so they physically go in and have a nice dinner. They physically go in and get gas in a car or whatever with a credit card. So, you know, it does happen to the smallest of people to the largest. You know, they don't really know who you are or what you are when they take your information.
So is it a smart idea as a business person, or even, I mean, if you have business credit cards or just your computer use in general, and I don't even know how possible this kind of thing is. I guess the question I was going to ask is it a smart idea to go in and check yourself on a regular basis what's being charged? I mean, you can do that electronically these days, right?
Yeah, electronically. I would highly suggest that you do that at least – to take a look, because once they steal your information, then and it works that first month, you will typically see repeated charges. And so, you know, and they'll do it in a manner that it almost looks normal. So, like, if you're looking at your electronic credit card bill, as an example, oftentimes there's a phone number behind it. Just Google it. You know, if you see a repeated number or a repeated charge on there, Google it. And I did that very thing myself, and it was a fraudulent charge. And as soon as I Googled the number, you know, there's let's just say ABC Company, and there's typically a phone number out to the side of it. When you Google it, if it's been a fraudulent situation that's occurred, there's typically something on the website that basically says this is a fraudulent charge. If you see this charge, you're going to see this charge with it, of which mine was. And then they basically try to do it every single month. It's a business. It's a you know, a very fast growing.
We need to break a little early. We got behind time. So let's go to that last break, and we'll come back and finish up.
Quick Stakes is your answer to staking. Lightweight, easy to ride on, easy to use, easy to find, and won't break your back carrying them like the old-fashioned wooden stakes. Have you tried a sample? If not, get a pen and paper and write down this number, 800-438-0387, or go to quickstake.com, that's quickstake.com, and order your samples. Ask your surveying supply dealer for Quick Stakes today.
Want to know if your Schonstedt locator is still under warranty? Go to Schonstedt.com and click on Warranty Finder in the lower left-hand corner. Enter your six-digit serial number, and it will tell you everything you need to know. Out of warranty? Click on Repair Department. But here's a tip. Before sending it in, pick up a $25 discount by going to Specials and Sales under the Buy Now tab at www.schonstedt.com.
With all the back and forth in today's politics, it seems as though the Constitution gets lost in the mix. If you want to brush up on your Constitution, then join Michael Conley every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. for the show Our Constitution on AmericasWebRadio.com.
Getting into underground utility location? If so, you'll want to know about the Schonstedt Instrument Company's MPC kit, a multi-purpose combo for locating both ferrous objects and underground pipes and cables. And because it consists of two instruments in one package, it qualifies for trade-in allowances on two locators. Any kind, any make, any condition. Contact your dealer for details. Or visit www.schonstedt.com. That's S-C-H-O-N-S-T-E-D-T.com.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
At least as we were leaving there, we were talking about a bunch of issues, and so I didn't know how much more we needed to wrap up on the cyber side. Looks like that's the kind of thing we can probably talk about forever. But there was another thing that you and I talked about this morning that just came to my attention recently that is kind of confusing to me, and you and I talked about it, so maybe that's something we could chat on.
Right.
But if you want to wrap up some on the cyber, we can do that.
Yeah. Well, you know, just to wrap up on the cyber piece, you know, basically what I would tell you is any company that's doing any type of web presence, so whether you're advertising, whether you've got a website yourself, or conducting activities on the website, you really need to take a look at and investigate the cyber liability. You know, you have the internet exposure, which is the internet liability piece of it, but you also have the media liability. And as you and I was just speaking, it's not as simple as just protecting the data breach. It's a coverage that is pretty much snowballing into, you know, everything from copying sites or trade secrets that people come back on, viruses. Then you deal with the business income loss because of the viruses and et cetera, to the point of, you know, the invasion of privacy from an employee perspective, you know, being liable or slanderous on an email to someone else. So there's a lot of things that's going on with cyber liability, and again, it's one that is, it's really, really growing out there. So don't find yourself excluded when something like this occurs, and try to avoid that liability as best as you can, or protect yourself from it. So, you know, if you have questions on it, need more information on it, please feel free to give us a call, and we'll help you as best as we can to protect those exposures.
When you mentioned the wording of emails and that earlier, I was sitting there thinking to myself, how often do you read something from someone, and maybe you don't know the person, and for whatever reason, the way you read it is not like they intended it at all.
Right, right.
So you have to be careful how you phrase things, I guess.
Yeah, well, you certainly, I know in-house, you know, I comment a lot about, you know, reread your email. You know, you upset me bad enough to read it, you reread it. But oftentimes, you know, it's not even intended to be, you know, a bad thing, you know, but someone else gets it and gets offended by it, and that's all you have to have, you know, and that's whether it's, you know, an uncolored, you know, joke, or whether it's, you know, a posting or whatever it might be. So, you know, there's people out there right now that's just waiting for something to happen, and this is the way they make their living at it. So, you know, be sensitive to it. It is a cover that we need to pay attention to. But yeah, I think it's worth talking, you know, you and I, switching gears a moment to our conversation this morning with regards to the professional liability. You know, I think I have got a couple of phone calls into, and you know, some of our carriers, and I'll get back in touch with you on that from a fine, you know, from the way they are viewing it. But I think it's worth something at least to pose the question if you want to
sure.
bring that
up. What we're talking about for the audience perspective, I got an email. I don't think I got a telephone call, but I got an email last week from one of the carriers asking me about something that they had been exposed to that had come up out in Oregon and maybe other places, and maybe that's one of the reasons to mention it, if it is. But the whole concept was the idea of setting approximate corners. And the idea being that I guess somehow somebody just wants a surveyor or maybe somebody with a handheld GPS unit. I'm not really sure yet. But the way I'm reading it, it looks like they were asking surveyor to come out and set an approximate corner. And that just raised my interest in it in terms of, well, what does that really mean? Because if you're a professional, they're probably, even if they say they want something approximate, they're going to assume that it's better than that. So I guess the question is, what kind of liability could you get yourself into on that kind of thing?
Right. Well, you know, as you and I talked, and I briefly got to talk to a couple of companies this morning, you know, the you know, you said it best, the word professional, professional surveyor. You know, you are holding yourself up in the public's viewpoint to be providing professional services, and those are you know, facts, not a guesstimate. So you know, if they're, you know, if they're, if the intent is to be providing a guesstimate on something, are you really providing professional act, and would that be covered under, or is that a gray area? Because you are being held up to a professional standard. And so, you know, that would be, you know, from our perspective, you know, we do need to, you know, to find out more details about it, exactly who is doing this and why. Because if someone is taking the guesstimate and taking that into consideration, and as we've talked quite often, and I said this morning, is if nothing ever happens, you know, you don't know whether you're covered or not, right?
Yeah.
But when something happens and somebody's taking your professional guesstimate as a corner and they've used that information accordingly, then, you know, they've taken that, they forget, they have, you know, amnesia when a claim occurs that it was supposed to have been a guesstimate and wasn't supposed to be used as the fact. They oftentimes forget that in a court of law.
Yeah, so, and I guess the other side of that, too, is even if that's between you and the person you're working for in terms of, you know, what can I use this for, that doesn't necessarily mean that somebody on the other side of that line is going to think that's the case unless they're involved in it as well.
Right,
so
right.
Clearly we want to – I haven't had the opportunity to try to track down any of my friends in that in the area where this came from to see what's really going on. Or I guess the reason we want to talk about it on the show today is I'm curious if listeners know of this kind of thing anywhere else. I just would really like to hear from people on that if it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know, and the thing is we can certainly, you know, find out more about it and bring it back up on the next show as well to get the information out there. You know, I'd be curious because, you know, when you're giving your professional opinion, you know, certainly if you have the coverage, you know, how would the coverage apply? But certainly if you're not covered, then, you know, naturally it's up in the air to begin with. It may be one of those things that could be covered under a contractual piece if you have a contract in place. But
right.
I would assume that you would have professional.
Of course, none of this discussion is intended to imply any justification for someone who isn't a surveyor to simply
right.
take their handheld or get coordinates from the local tax map folks or whatever database that kind of thing is kept in and going out. And because you hear those kind of claims from time to time that you can do this and you can do that with our little piece of equipment here, and then you know, way deep into the fine print somewhere it says, well, you really can't do that. But so the fact that we're talking about it from the perspective of setting approximate corners and whether or not that's the right thing for a surveyor to do, we certainly are not saying it's the right thing for anybody to do to represent something that isn't done properly or is fact-based.
Right. That's exactly right. So, yep. Well, you know, on that note, with respect to the professional liability, you know, and as we were saying earlier on the way things change, as we all know, we've kind of seen some increases in work and in the economy overall, and which is all encouraging. But with that said, I have certainly seen some increases in coverages. And so whereas in the past we've been able to, you know, lower some limits and help from a cost overhead perspective, but we are seeing more and more increases from the surveyor being forced into carrying higher limits. And so higher limits, everything from the general liability to your commercial auto as well as professional. So that is coming from some of the contracts that are being picked up out there. So it used to be that it would be abnormal to carry a $2 million professional liability limit for a, you know, a regular, you know, normal surveying company. A million is typically the coverage limit, and we're now seeing a mandate of $2 million typically, and then even asking for an umbrella that sets over that. So
these are mandates coming from clients of surveyors?
Yes.
I see.
Yeah. So naturally that's only increasing the, you know, the business bottom line cost upward to cover your contracts and being able to go out there and get some of the jobs that's being mandated, the limits that's being mandated to carry. So be aware of that, and I guess plan accordingly to try to, you know, make sure that you're getting the best price out there as you can. So.
Are you? We got about a minute left, but I'm just curious. Are you seeing instances where surveyors are coming to ask about liability insurance who hadn't necessarily done it before because more and more clients are asking for it?
Absolutely. There are not only clients, but their general liability carriers are mandating that they carry at least some minimal amount of professional, and most of the time it's $250,000 in limits. And if not, they will not. They're getting very limited, if any, that will pick up general liability exposures without some form of professional to be carried as well.
Right. Well, we are 15 seconds away from going, so thanks again for being with me today, Lisa. We'll won't go as long between times when we speak again, but I really appreciate you joining me today. It's been a great conversation.
Yeah, not a problem, and thank you for allowing us, and give us a call if you have any questions.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
This is America's Webradio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.